World War II Commemoration Day, June 5th, 1982. Memorial tributes presented by guest speakers, Master of Ceremonies Phil Tudiakov, Chairman of the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association.
May I have your attention, please? For those of you who missed the ceremonies at the airport earlier today, I'll introduce myself again. My name is Helen Hamner. I'm president of the city of the chamber of, president of the city council of the city of Unalaska. Mayor Huffman normally would be with you at this time, but he's asked me to express his disappointment for being unable to attend. Those of you who know Mayor Huffman can appreciate the sincerity behind that request. As we all know, he literally dotes on this type of affair. I'm a poor substitute for his silver tongue, but with your permission, I'll try. I gave a lot of thought to what I might impart to you at this time, and was struggling to put some of that wisdom down on paper, when we received a telegram from State Representative Eric Sutcliffe expressing his disappointment at not being able to be here. His few words so capably captured the thought swimming around in my head that I decided to read his words instead, and I quote, "We who live in the Aleutians are unique in the sense that for us World War II is more than just a fading page of history. No other area in the United States still has decaying barracks, ammunition dumps, and vast quantities of other war material littering around the countryside. No sunken warships still at rest in its harbors. In no other area of this country were entire settlements evacuated for the duration of the war. Some of them remain as ghost towns today. In no other area of this nation did the civilization suffer as did the Aleutian people. It is appropriate that the Aleutian campaign of World War II be commemorated so that Alaskans may take time to consider this event, to harbor the bravery of those who served their country, to reflect on the suffering of those forced from their homes, and to be aware of the consequence of a battle which took place 40 years ago and is still with us today in the Aleutians." That was the extent of Eric's telegram, and with that, I would like to reintroduce to you our Master of Ceremonies today, Mr. Philemon Tudiakov, who has quite a Singapore tongue himself. Ladies and gentlemen, Phil Tudiakov.
I never thought I'd say this. Thank you, Madam President. Of all the important things that have happened today, I've been reminded time and again that one of the most important parts of everything are the beautiful women of Unalaska who prepared the food. Let's give them a hand. The mood music was provided by the Pritchett family. the Dyed-in Wool Buglers, Bob Pritchett, Len Brown, Andy Brown, Susie Brown, Christine Nelson. Flying just as high in importance is a young lady who unfortunately could not be with us. She is with us in spirit. Everybody that saw the memorial must remember that is the work done by Beth Rout. That was a result of a school-wide celebration. I'd like to revert back to the spirit that the Aleuts have been able to keep up. It was obvious from the part of the ceremony that dealt with the memorial during the horrible time, the thing that held the Aleuts together in spirit every Saturday night and Sunday morning was the Russian Orthodox faith. It's a legacy that came to us when the first Russian got blown ashore up in Captain's Bay. It was exemplified in the finest manner by Father Gromov and the Russian Orthodox Choir of Unalaska. At this present time, just because I doing this, I'm winging it, I would like to present the first speaker, Admiral William Russell.
Phil, you didn't tell me I was supposed to make a speech.
I haven't told anybody that.
Well, my claim to fame is I loaned my overcoat to a fellow who was sort of shivering out there. We got used to the cold wind up here in July 1941. We came up with a squadron, and I had come from another post of duty, and I was enjoying leave at my home in Tacoma in Washington State. And I called on the commanding officer of the squadron I was about to join in Lake Washington, Naval Air Station, Seattle. And he was very kind to me. He showed me over the squadron. And I was prepared to go home and enjoy the rest of my leave. And he asked me when I was checking in. And I gave him the date of termination of my leave. And he shook his head and he said, I wouldn't come on that date. I would come on this date. And I said, well, I don't want to do that because I'll lose 9 days' leave. Why? He says, we're deploying to Alaska. We wound up in Kiska Harbor, based there on seaplane tender, for 2 weeks, and then slowly worked our way back. My squadron was the first one to come out of the water on the ramp in Dutch Harbor. And we settled down in Kodiak. And we had just come out on rotation with VP-41, my squadron was 42, when the war broke. And of course, after some long-range patrols off Washington State coast, largely covering cripples coming back from Pearl Harbor, we multiplied the squadron by two, drew amphibians, fortunately, so we could land ashore, and came back up. From the end of January until late May, my squadron was the only Navy patrol squadron in Alaska. We had our squadron headquarters at Kodiak. I kept six planes there, four at Dutch Harbor and two at Sitka. And that's about 2,000 miles of coastline, and we were the offshore patrol. I never will forget coming down here in winter of 1942 to relieve the detachment from the squadron that was here before us, VP-41. And there was a line shack where the people who had the waders to come out in the water and turn the seaplanes around inhabited down on the next to the ramp on the waterfront here. And in this little house, the beach shack we called it, there was a chart, and it was a chart of morale. Time was horizontal, morale was vertical in the chart, and it looked to me as if there was a steady downtrend in the curve. There was a slight bump in it because there was a note underneath that said a consignment of beer arrived today. Well, you know that chart, the line came down to the bottom, then it came down the wall and across the floor. Were they happy to see us? They were indeed. But it wasn't so bad down here. We have nice people. And learning this country is really something that I think every American should do. It's rugged country, it's an outpost, still. Fishing's good, hunting's good. So we could enjoy it when we were out on patrol. I think today marks sort of a benchmark. This, as you know, is to in memory of all those who fought and died up here. And it goes beyond just our own nation. It goes over to our former enemy. And I think it's very, very nice of you people to accept our former enemies. It's their memorial too. And it's also ours. And I want to thank you very much for the day. It's meant a lot to me. Thank you so very much.
I wasn't asked, but up here over my head is Ang Angalin, which is Aleut for, and I can't give my version. Literal translation is, hello, people. It's a greeting that's peculiar to the people that were here and stayed and came back during that Aleutian campaign. As Master of Ceremonies, it's my pleasure to introduce from Japan, Admiral Sama Jima.
Ladies and gentlemen, maybe I'm sure you have much difficulties to hear my poor English, but I try to do my best in speaking English. First of all, I would like to express my sincere appreciation for the kind invitation extended to me and Colonel Abe to attend at the memorial ceremony held today in Dutch Harbor. I am especially very grateful for your kind and thoughtful consideration of including the Japanese war dead. IS-11 flight, we had to come here yesterday, and SNB flight this morning over Unalaska Island and landing at Umnak Island reminded me of all the days flight for the Chaba Airlines. I am now filled with deep emotion beyond my expression. I wish to pay my heartfelt tribute to all people who have lost their lives for their country during the Aleutian campaign, World War II. After the war, Japan has accomplished amazing recovery from war damage, thanks to the great help given by United States, which we never forget. It is my firm belief that we should continue and keep the fine relationship existing now between both nations and never fight again. I would like to continue more. I will do, it has been the most impressive, significant experience in my life to have attended at this memorial ceremony. I will do my best to inform to the Japanese concerned about today's wonderful memorial ceremony. Thank you very much.
In keeping with that inscription, which is etched in stone, Lieutenant Colonel Diamond, Canada.
First of all, I might say that I was pretty small when this all happened and did not participate as the two previous speakers did. However, I'm no less honored to be part of this function and do thank all the residents of Dutch Harbor and Unalaska for their tremendous hospitality. I have a couple of comments I would like to make, however, on behalf of Canadians. One, your ceremony today was most memorable, very, very touching. You might ask what my connection with any of this is. It's not as remote as it might seem. I'm a commanding officer of a search and rescue squadron on Vancouver Island on the West Coast. It was previously not a search and rescue squadron, but a fighter squadron, number 14, and it came up here in June, shortly after the 2nd or the 3rd, depending on which date we're talking about, and deployed on the 7th of June, along with two other Canadian squadrons to assist the U.S. Army Air Corps. And later on, when the big offensive started, Canadian Army participated as well. We, as did the Japanese, as did the U.S. Army Air Corps, lose quite a few people. I suppose the predominant number of those were lost to weather. You know how difficult it is to get around, even today. And during World War II, the nav aids were very few and the weather was difficult, and that's where we lost a lot of our young pilots. I have another remote connection in that my father was a P-40 pilot on one of those Canadian squadrons, and he flew at Annette Island. That was number 111 squadron. So you're not as foreign to me as you might think. I'm very touched to be here, and I join with you in remembering all the fallen dead on both sides and hope that we never have to repeat it again. Thank you very much.
Lieutenant Colonel Diamond forgot to mention those members of Kastner's Cutthroats. Some of you may know them. I'm sure our next speaker, General Talley. Now, he's the guy that gave the Unalaska Corporation most of our assets. General Talley.
Thank you. After listening with all of you to the excellent remarks, which just better. I'm going to be a heavy speaker until I have to hold it up. After listening to the remarks that have gone before, I can assure you that it's extremely difficult to find something else to say. I will say this, however, that if my memory serves me correctly, it is here that the first time that American soil was attacked by a foreign power, I believe, since the War of 1812. I believe that was the last time that an attack was made on our soil. I think also for that reason it's fitting and proper that this be the first place that we join with our common foe, who was our foe at that time, and dedicating a memorial to those who on both sides who gave their lives that we might have a better world. In order to make good steel, you temper it. You temper it with fire. Fortunately or unfortunately, and I can assure you that I'm not wise enough to tell you which it is, but humankind must be tempered in that same manner. You give us everything that is good, and it makes us bad. It is necessary that we too go through the fire that comes to humankind in exactly the same manner as it comes to steel before we can be made a better people. People who have reached my age have a great advantage over the young, although I'm still young at heart. And that is, we can look in both directions. We can look to the back and see what we've gone through before and see what our country has gone through. Likewise, we can look forward to what we hope will be a great and better future. I haven't had time to ask Admiral Russell this, and I believe I'll even look in his direction when I say it. But I think, Admiral, before World War II hit the United States, that we had the sorriest bunch of young people that we have ever had. We needed that. We needed World War II. We needed something to make better men and better women out of the youth who in the 30s had been taught to believe that all they had to do was to lean on the government, that the government would take care of them. We have our aid programs, we have a lot of things now, but nothing like we had it then, because they did not want to look to the future. Uncle take care of us, we don't have to do that. And I saw those same men come back from the war, the finest young men I believe that I ever saw. I also saw our men in Vietnam, the last assignment that I had, and fortunately I've served with all of our services, the Army, the Navy, the Air Corps, and the Air Force, and with the Marines. My last assignment, for example, was in Vietnam for the Navy as a civilian. I believe that the finest fighting men that I ever saw under the American flag were our men and women in Vietnam. It takes the same fire that it takes to make good steel to make good people. And I think it is fitting that we join here with our foe of 40 years ago and pledge that we don't want it to happen again. If we have peace on both sides of the Pacific, meaning if the United States and Japan are friends, friendly powers, there will be peace throughout the periphery of the Pacific. I believe that very strongly. I want to tell you an incident that very few people know. I don't believe that my two new friends here in the Japanese service in World War II perhaps did not know it. There was no reason why they should, because it was just an incident in the history. After VJ Day, I was on Okinawa, rather I was on Okinawa then, and then after VJ Day, I was part of a team to go to Korea to make the arrangements for the arrival of the American forces which were going to occupy Korea after the Japanese army had surrendered. We started out in 8 airplanes from Okinawa. The typhoon hit. 6 of the planes turned back. 2 of them went forward. One is C-47 carrying radio equipment and a crew of Signal Corps people and 1 or 2 others, and a B-25 in which I was the only passenger. The B-25 was a little Mitchell bomber, a very small bombing plane, and I was the only passenger. We went on and landed at Seoul, Korea. The Japanese Air Force was online. We landed with the whole side of the field lined with Japanese aircraft. We were met by a delegation of the Army, Navy, and the Air, and of the civil component of the government of Korea, representing the minister, who in turn represented his government in Tokyo. We waited for 2 or 3 hours, and a message came that the other 8 airplanes had turned back. We therefore found ourselves guests, if you please, of the Japanese Army and of the Japanese forces until the others arrived. We stayed 3 days with the Japanese Army, as I would say, as their guest. And circumstance, I was not the senior officer. The senior officer was a staff officer of one of the staff branches and was not a line officer. Therefore, he was not eligible in our service to exercise what might be combat command. So I had to assume the authority of being the responsible for our little detachment. I learned a lot from the Japanese and from the Japanese Army during those days. So much so that when the time came for us to, I'd been notified, we're using the Japanese radio, sending all of our messages in the clear, and I'd been notified that our force was going to land either the following day or the day after that. So I drafted a message back to our commanding general, General Hodges, Hodge, H-O-D-G-E, who was aboard one of the transports coming on to Korea. And I told him that after spending this time with the Japanese Army and with the Japanese command, that I'd like to suggest to him that instead of landing in a combat formation, in an assault formation like we do when you land on a hostile shore and in a beachhead, that we make a peaceful debarkation, that the Japanese Army, they had told me that they would withdraw from the city of Incheon where we were going to land as we approached, and that when we came ashore, they then would be in the edge of the city awaiting further instructions. I had been told that, and I repeated that message to the command afloat. The High Commissioner had placed a liaison officer with me and with us there to be our contact with whomsoever we wanted to meet. They asked us, is there anyone that we would like to meet, and did we know anyone there? Now, Virginia, my wife, hasn't heard this until now, and I want you to watch the expression on her face because I'm not going to look. I said, yes. I said, when I was a student at Georgia Tech, there was a girl, a Korean girl, who was a guest of one of the people who went to our church, and she came to church on a Sunday night and said that she was one of the, I believe, one of the princesses of the Korean house which ruled Korea back in the other centuries. And I said, she lived in Seoul. I wonder if you could find her. That had only been less than from 1924 to 1944, that is 45, only 21 years, just as Reagan would say, it seemed like only yesterday. They said, why, yes, but she was not one of the blooded princesses. She was, as you said, the niece of someone, meaning that she was the daughter of a concubine. But yes, she's married, here she's happy. Would you like for her to come to see you? And then I had second thoughts, and I said, no, thank you, I don't believe that I should. I told this to someone, and they said, why didn't you ask to see Syngman Rhee, who was probably the most outstanding leader in Korea? You know, I never thought of that. But anyway, I did think of the message that went out, and I asked the liaison officer with me, who incidentally was a major general, and I was only a colonel, but nevertheless, he was the one that they had asked to represent the Japanese in our service. So I asked him to read the message, which I had just written, in the clear to our commander, suggesting that he make a peaceful debarkation. And he says, no, I can't read your message. I mustn't do it. I can't read it. And I said, will you take it to the High Commissioner and ask him for me, please? Would he read the message before it was dispatched? He came back in about 15 minutes, and he was weeping. He says, to think that you are willing to do that. I said, yes, why should we trust you? And we believe that it is safe for us to make a peaceful landing in Korea, and we made it. we did not land in combat formation at all. Also, when I went back, came back to the States, I went to Los Angeles, and the night that I was, after I got to Los Angeles, and I spent the afternoon at a guest of a friend, in a friend's home, who was a radio newscaster, as we called them in those days, and we had talked about the war all afternoon. And I told him this. I said, to me, this is a war which should never have been fought. If we had known the Japanese as well before the war as we know them now, and in turn, if they had known us as well as we know them now, I don't believe this war would ever have been fought, would never have been necessary, except for this one thing overhanging us all, and that is we good things never make good people. Good things make bad people. Now, that's a big mouthful, but I sincerely believe that. If you have everything good, why should you improve yourself? No struggle. You don't want it that way. You don't want to know what tomorrow is going to bring. It'd be like reading an old book, like seeing an old movie you've seen in your childhood if it happened. So I still feel that if we had known each other better and had understood each other, it was a war that we would never have had to fight. But unfortunately, we had to do it. I think also, going back to the point that I made before, this is the first place where American soil was attacked. I'm very happy to have been privileged to be here to join in with everyone in a commemorative service of dedication to those on both sides who lost their lives, that we might continue the course of action that we have commenced here today. Now, at Gettysburg, Lincoln said that we cannot dedicate this ground, we cannot hallow it. And what we say here will be long forgotten, but what was done here will never be forgotten. I feel that about the move that we have made here in joining with our erstwhile foe and saying, let's continue this way. And I believe that we shall. Now, my talk is over, but I'm going to make a request, and that is that some of the news media here please make available to Japan a record of what has happened and send it to them on videotape so that the Japanese people can both see and hear of what has been done here today. Thank you.
General Talley, I can tell you right now that the footage shot and the coverage of the ceremony that took place today and additional footage shot during the Second World War will be sent by ABC of Alaska, Channel 13, out of Anchorage. You can also tell that I have no idea of military protocol, and I can't apologize for something I don't know anything about, which leads up to the next speaker. Nobody has asked about the president of our great country. When we're all done with this, we will tell him about it. But to bring it closer to home, the governor of Alaska, Jay Hammond, has given the honor of representing himself to the next speaker, General Sherrill.
I agree your name.
Phil, you don't have to apologize for military protocol. Protocol only exists in the military. Our job is to serve you, the people. To individually recognize all of the distinguished persons present at this ceremony today would probably result in my overlooking someone, much to my own embarrassment. To preclude this, I believe that the greatest honor and dignity that we can lend to this ceremony is that regardless of where we are from or what our positions in life may be, we are all brothers and sisters in peace. This is epitomized by the centerpieces, the figurines that had been cut out and placed upon some of the tables, hand in hand. Almost 40 years ago to the day, military history was being made in this community and in this island chain. It is not my intent today to commiserate over national ambitions or policies that prompted this conflict. Our objective should be to pay respect to the soldiers, sailors, and airmen of Japan, Canada, and the United States who served in this theater, and especially those who made the supreme sacrifice. All are heroes in their own right. The worthiness of their cause was not a personal choice, but like all good soldiers, loyalty to their nation and adherence to duty prevailed. Let us be inspired and challenged by their deeds and rededicate ourselves to our quest for a just and lasting peace throughout this world, so that those who have served have not served in vain. The two most precious gifts that our generation can give to another are peace and freedom. Our task today is to assure that peace, our task today is to assure that peace and freedom. From positions of moral and physical strength, we must maintain the will and the courage to sustain and to unify us in making this a better world. It will be deeds, not words, which will mean the most. Our responsibilities as soldiers and citizens are clear. Let us also on this occasion not forget the impact that this conflict had on the Alaskan people, especially the Aleuts, who were uprooted from their homes and their culture and settled elsewhere in Alaska and the continental United States against their will for the duration of the hostilities. Adequate honor has not been paid to their sacrifice. So therefore, on behalf of a grateful state, your fellow Alaskans, I take this opportunity to say thank you and God bless you. In closing, the fears, concern, love, and dreams of gladiators on battlefields throughout history has always been the same. And I want to share with you the thoughts that were extracted from a diary of a Japanese officer and doctor who was serving in a military field hospital on Attu. On 29 May 1943, he began his last entry in the diary. And the day before, he had eaten half-fried thistle, which he had described as being a delicacy, for it was the first fresh food that he had eaten in 6 months. I share this because I want to impress upon you that many people are affected by the trials and tribulations of war. And his entry begins, "Only 33 years living, and I am to die here. I have no regrets. I am grateful that I have kept the peace of my soul. Goodbye, my beloved wife, who loved me to the last. Until we meet again, grant you Godspeed. Maseka, who just became 4 years old, will grow up unhindered. Fukiko, I feel sorry. You will never see your father. Well, be good, brother. Goodbye. That was the last entry in that diary. The following day, the last battle of Attu was fought. Military men know there is no glory in war. We should be proud that we can stand today shoulder to shoulder, Japanese, Canadians, Americans, brothers and sisters in peace. Thank you.
As everybody knows, especially the good things in life do not come free. At this time, it gives me great pleasure to acknowledge the faith and assistance that is exemplified by what this woman took upon herself to do when she first heard that we were planning this. I would like to ask Marty Norton, Boss Tug and Towing, who brought the monument. Without this day, what we are doing now would not be possible. Marty Norton. Several of the visiting dignitaries have commented on the beauty of our women, and I'd be the first to brag. We have another fine-looking lady who helped everybody's effort at this time, Cheryl Perdue, American. She's got the snappiest telex in the chain. Going on with the order, which doesn't appear to have any. We have from the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, nonprofit corporation, we, and I can say this because I'm the chairman, are at the gut level. Greg Brelsford, Executive Director of APIA.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association is the tribal governing body of the Aleut people. It's one of 12 regional tribal governing bodies in the state of Alaska, created under the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act. We are proud and honored to be involved in this commemorative ceremony and to be included among the panel of distinguished speakers here today. This occasion brings back many memories for all of those who participated both directly and indirectly. Memories of fear and loss, suffering and sacrifice, sadness, frustration, anger, and rage. Memories also of bravery and courage, camaraderie and purposefulness. These memories are felt by all persons involved, Aleut, Caucasian, Black, Japanese. No group escaped untouched, unscarred, or unchanged. This, I believe, is the value of what we do here today. We take time to remember and to pay homage and respect to what happened 40 years ago. We commemorate here today those who stood tall and proud and determined in the midst of that tragic struggle and destruction 40 years ago, in which those involved did what had to be done in the face of large and powerful forces beyond anyone's control. Our presence here today is also a dramatic demonstration of the fact that life goes on. Throughout all time, the human spirit has struggled with conflict and destruction, and it has endured. And those groups involved 40 years ago have also endured. And as life goes on, so must we go on with our lives. Life itself calls us and draws us forward. We ill serve the sacrifices and struggles of 40 years ago if we resist this call to go forward. The future is truly open-ended. The Aleut Tribal Governing Body, the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, stands committed to the creation of a meaningful and productive future and to going forward together in peace, cooperation, and collaboration in its development. Thank you.
That noise tells you there's a couple of us that need the mic at this level. We go from gut level to the top of the Aleut culture, the president of the Aleut Corporation, the right hand, if API is in the Aleut, is the left hand, and the Aleut Corporation is the right, Mr. Agafon Krukoff.
Before I say what I have to say, I'm about to say, I'd like to say that it was a very touching ceremony this afternoon. It was really a warm feeling to see the Japanese representatives and American representatives together this afternoon. I felt very good about it. I have to say that before I say this. A few weeks ago, I was called by Philman to ask to speak during the ceremonies in Dutch related to the history of what happened here during World War II. I have to admit that blew my mind. I didn't know, what do you say representing your people about what happened? Because, you know, in all real life, there's been mixed emotions about the past. Then our people are positive-minded people. We have the same spirit of forgiveness, human compassion that we see in Americans and in other countries. I called up Ted Spencer. I was curious about the aircrafts that were coming to Dutch Harbor. I believe Ted is here today. And I asked him about, well, what are you going to do with the aircraft coming? I was really mixed up about the whole thing. So I began to talk to our people. And I had to write what I'm about to speak on, because there have been a lot of feelings, but I wrote down today what I thought best represented the feeling of our people. In the spirit of the Aleut people, and in a country where human compassion can be freely expressed, we're here today, 40 years after the nightmare of war. War that caused much suffering, the loss of at least one village in our region. I didn't live the experience, neither did most of us here today. But our fathers and mothers, families, and some of you here today did. The ugliness of the poorly executed encampment of our people shall never be forgotten. The question of whether the Attu Aleuts were treated better in Japan over the treatment of those placed in camps in Southeast Alaska is a sad thing to be asking today. But it is never in the spirit of our people to say that the glass is half empty, but rather that it's half full. It is in this spirit that it should be said that if there is any bright side to this history, it opened the eyes of my people to the real world outside. For example, the Pribilof people, St. Paul and St. George, being amongst those villages that were evacuated and put in rundown camps in southeastern Alaska, learned during that encampment about different lifestyles that exist in the world, which shocked them into the realization that they were all these years up to World War II under our U.S. government on St. Paul and St. George, living a life of actual slavery, slaves of a federal seal harvest. After the war, they managed to correct the wrong and were eventually freed from this terrible lifestyle. The Unalaska village also making the best from a terrible situation. Now, 40 years later, is fully utilizing the assets left here from the war. There are apartments, warehouses, office buildings, etc., that the village has been actively developing and doing a fine job at it. But let us never say that war was good for us. While there may have been some benefits in the long run, it cost us quite dearly. The friends and relatives that suffered and died must be remembered. No one can weigh the personal losses. Remembering that the glass is half full, it should be said at this time it can be fuller. That the joint plea of the Aleut people and the Japanese Americans are heard and are properly, I hate to use this word, compensated. For the unnecessary losses caused by the war, this chapter in our history will finally be closed. On behalf of the Aleut region, I wish to suggest to all of us gathered here today with our Japanese friends that we will be friends forever.
I'm going to have to ad-lib because I see Channel 13 and those TV cameras coming through the door. They're looking for an outlet. From the time that the idea was just that in the mind of Mr. Ted Spencer, we had an extending hand that was open with assistance of any kind. And I quote the gentleman, I'm sorry that he's not here, but this next person is the kind of a person that'll make your day, no matter what time of the day you see her. You can tell she enjoys life to the fullest every second. Janice Ogle. While she's making her way up here, she will be representing Revolution Airways and herself. Maybe not in that order.
Phil didn't tell me I was going to make a speech either. I will only say that on behalf of Revolution Airways, it has been for the Airways an honor and a pleasure to help participate in making this day possible for everyone. Thank you.
And now, according to the very carefully typed script, Rayford Perry of the 11th Air Force.
I thought I'd never return here. And after I'm here, I was cold the whole time I was here. But now, the warmth of the reception and the people here, I'll make this short. I would like to come back again. Thank you very much.
Just to know, I mean, just to indicate that I do know something about what I'm doing, my pleasure to indicate, to introduce the members of the Honor Guard, Tech Sergeant Robert Gardina, Master Sergeant Ken Withrop, Tech Sergeant Douglas Zimmer, Tech Sergeant Ralph Hitchcock. I did fail to get the names of the cannon, the howitzer crew. I don't feel bad. They didn't pick my target. Bill Brooks, President, Air Force Association.
I was looking for you over there. Well, you know, I feel kind of like a lot of the rest of these people. This is the first time I knew I was supposed to get up here and say a few words, so I think the success of any speech at a organization or a thing like this is to keep it short. So I think that it's a great honor for us to be out here and to do the little things that we have done. And I'll be just like the rest of the boys here. I'll say thank you very much for a wonderful reception, and I'll go sit down. Thank you again.
Dr. Don Rogers, President, Alaska Chapter, Plains of Fame. And representing the United States Coast Guard, we couldn't get anybody off the ship. I don't know why, but we do have Captain Ray Spokman.
The skipper of the ship, Captain Crum, was at the ceremony. I talked to him, as was his executive officer. And I would like to add my thanks and heap them on to all the people of this area for the fine ceremony, the fine food, and the camaraderie that we've had. We've had Memorial Day, 31st of last month. We have another memorial today. And I think we've pretty well heard just about all of the sadness that I want to hear for a while. But I did reiterate a few stories from some of the people that did participate from the Coast Guard. When at the outbreak of the war, why the Navy, having more rifles than we did, shot out all the aids to navigation. Well, wasn't a short time later they come back and says, would you light them again? Too many of our ships are running aground. So we had to go back and relight them. We had about 7 cutters in Alaska at that time, and I think most of the people know that the Coast Guard has been here since the very beginning of its territory in Alaska. And I think one of our claims to assisting during this time was that we provided ferry service for the Army, the Navy, the Air Corps, and I think we run a passenger service for them. But we did establish about 30 to 40% more aids to navigation during this particular period. And we did participate in some of the campaigns. We landed about 2,100 troops from the Arthur Middleton on Amchitka. And that was not easy to do because of the weather. And shortly thereafter, a Willowaw hit her and she ran aground. Well, she stayed there for about 84 days, would you believe? Well, our good Japanese aces attacked her periodically. And I'm happy to note, at least from the information that I have, they did not score one hit. And conversely, the Coast Guard didn't hit anything either. But there was another occasion that the Coast Guard cutter Cedar was out at Attu, and a Japanese plane came over. And reports given to me was that we manned all the guns, fired about 1,000 rounds of ammunition, and everybody was well pleased with themselves. And about that time, we got a flashing light from a Navy destroyer. It says, quit wasting ammunition or out of range. So we did participate. Some of us were good, some of us not so good. But I'm glad I'm here, and I want to make it just about short, and I know I'll be back. And thank you very much.
Received a red letter request. Would the former members of Patrol Wing 4 please stand? Chaplain Ted Davis. Forgot your title.
Yeah. I'm with the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association North Star Chapter of Anchorage. I was on a destroyer Reed in Pearl Harbor December 7th. And we managed to survive that day, but we lost two destroyers and one dry dock, and one in the floating dry dock. Anyway, later on, about May, we wound up here in the Aleutian campaign, and during the bombing of Dutch Harbor, we was just within hearing distance, hiding in the fog bank. But we also participated in we did get some prisoners off the submarine that torpedoed the Casco. And then later on, we escorted the Corps of Engineers to ADAC and also in the first bombardment of Kiska. But going back to Pearl Harbor, after 40 years later, last December, we did a half-hour documentary at the request of the Department of Education at state of Alaska. Anyway, we're going back to the schools and showing the film and then a question and answer session. We've got a good response at it. I went to about 12 schools myself, besides what the other boys did. Now we'd like to do the same thing on the whole Aleutian campaign, all the way to Kiska and that too. And I'd like to make it with a joint venture with Ted Spencer. So we're going to have a lot of work cut out for us. Our hardest thing will be transportation, and next will be finances. So we may need some help at a later date. Thank you.
Colonel Robert Looney.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a student of cold weather warfare, I have had the opportunity to study the Aleutian campaign in great detail, and I would tell you sincerely that it's an honor for me to be here tonight. I'm very humbled to be among so many people who know so much and participated so much in this campaign. And in that regard, if you think I'm going to tell any stories or cite any examples with all of you experts here, you're wrong. I'm sure you know that the hardships endured in this campaign were unsurpassed in any other one in World War II or probably almost any other war. The achievements in this campaign will go down in the history of warfare as an example of things that should and could be done if they're really down to the wire and it has to be done. The logistical support provided to get what had to be done out to the end of this Aleutian chain is down in the history annals of our logistics references. The engineer accomplishments are extensive, very extensive, and I certainly wouldn't go into them in General Talley's presence because he's the guy that did it all. And I'm sure that you also know that the fierceness of the fighting in the Aleutian campaign, according to our Army historical manuals, was second in World War I only to the Battle of Iwo Jima. The attack made by the Japanese forces on Attu as their final major effort was one of the most fiercest battles in World War II. Many lessons were learned in this conflict, and many of these are still used today in our military training and teachings. We lost many cold weather casualties because we had not properly trained them or equipped them. Today we do a better job, and it's because of that lesson. I'm very pleased to be a participant in this occasion, and I hope that commemoratives such as this for this campaign will continue on in the future. Thank you very much.
Colonel Abe from Japan deferred to Admiral, but we're going to request that Colonel Abe approach the microphone, please.
Minasan, it's beyond my words. So deeply impressed I am by the excellent ceremony today and by everything you extended to us. Now, my mission is to tell, to report about those events to the families of or dead. Thank you very much indeed. Somebody said that they saved the best for the last. Before we reach that, on your way out, you are directed to purchase the Aleutian Invasion. Because nobody came prepared for change, you can buy a hardback for $10. If you don't want to do that, you can write to the Unalaska School, zip code 99685. That takes care of the commercial. That part that is always saved for the last has to be taken by only one person. On the 11th of March, 1982, when I thought my telephone was going to have another attack of its seemingly continuous diarrhea, Ted Spencer called me from Anchorage. That led up to one of the most exciting things that I have had the pleasure to be part of. This man had the idea. He slid it past me, and I got to tell you, it hit a nerve. The feeling that for the very first time in the history of man, everyone who suffered by warfare would gather together at one time in the same place to pay homage to those that fell. Ladies and gentlemen, Ted Spencer.
I've been thinking about what I was going to say, and I came up with a variety of long-winded and flowery speeches, but quite frankly, I'm pooped. I think that the emotions of what this type of monument means and the impact that it's had on the people that came to participate has been well spoken by preceding speakers. Much history has been given, and I think that the documentation that's going to take place, develop, will serve as a record for something that was in danger of being lost. As a novice historian, I had the occasion to study the Aleutian campaign. And one of the things that it struck me the deepest was the tremendous amount of suffering that went on, not only by through warfare, but just by being in the area, and how ill-equipped the humans that were here, with the exception of the Aleuts, for them it's a way of life to live in this area. But for the young people from both Japan, Canada, and the United States that were thrust here, not to their, of their choice, but by the fortunes of time and governments that were anonymous. And these young people came to this area and gave everything. They gave their lives. They wrote new annals in heroism and courage. And in the late 70s, early 80s, when I was reading about all this and studying it just out of interest, I realized that there were no real memorials to this. There are very few books. There are virtually no films. There's no record, unless you dig, whatsoever. And I grew up in this state. I never heard a thing about it. I think that by studying war, people say, well, let's just forget about it. You know, it was a
bad deal and everybody, you know, was hurt by it. Let's forget about it. Let's not remember pain. I think that the best way to avoid having this happen again is to study it and to realize what a painful experience it is and how far-reaching it is. The people that died are gone. The people that are wounded or crippled are probably in good health, but in working with the various veterans, both Japanese, American, and Canadian, I see other types of wounds. I see the mental scars that takes the edge off of the joy of life and leaves bitter memories in a period of time when people are at their youngest and finest stages of life. And I think that this monument, aside from the documentation that comes about, will serve as a reminder to all the people that visit this area and cause them to stop and think, if only for a moment, about this tragedy. I've gotten a lot of pats on the back, you know, good job. But I'd like to try to de-emphasize that a little bit by thanking dozens and dozens of people that have assisted. None of this would have been possible. It's impossible for one person to do it. First of all, the city of Dutch Harbor, with their community staff, and the citizens that have pitched in every which way possible. I mean, everything from carrying the rocks that surround the monument to the food, accommodations, or just friendliness. You know, it really helps when you're struggling with a project. The company of Revolution Airways, the Reeve family and the Reeve staff, they did more than just fly us down here. They did a number of things which made it a lot easier. They gave us monetary considerations so that we could do things. They transported items that we needed to bring this thing off. The Foss Barge and Tug Company, which brought the monument up here. The Aleut Pribilof Islands Association, the Aleut Corporation, Chevron, ARCO, the State Division of Tourism, Evergreen Memorial Chapel. All these people contributed something. They listened to the idea and they knocked money off, or they gave helpful advice, or they hurried things through. This whole thing took place in a period of 3 months. And this is really where the success of this type of a venture comes from. There's a few individuals that I'd like to mention that really stand out as individuals, single people that through individual efforts assisted me invaluably. And the credit must be shared by them equally. Of course, Phil Tudyakov, who has been my partner in crime the last 3 months and has handled a lot of the coordination down on this end. I'd never visited Dutch Harbor before. Didn't know the layout, didn't know the people. He took care of it, putting me in touch with a lot of people that assisted us. The list goes on and on. He's really been an equal partner and deserves half the credit. Other people that believed in the project and assisted in me and assisted me in unmentionable ways are Bill Brooks, Rayford Perry, General Talley, Admiral Russell, and Bob Uchitel. Bob has a peculiar habit of arriving at the 11th hour when it is most dark and dropping a little ball of sunshine onto the projects that we've engaged in. He's was invaluable this time around. And I'd like to thank the media people who, the media, they can take an interest in a project or ignore it. And if they decide to ignore it, then fairly likely that the project will fail for lack of public interest. Chemo Television took a strong interest in this project and have put everything into it. I feel that the footage that has been shot on the veterans on location, recounting their experience, will serve as a record for decades. I really believe in the work that they have done and are doing, and I'm looking forward to the final product. I'd also like to thank the PBS team from Fairbanks, who is doing an equally good job. And we stand a good chance of getting this information and history out to the entire country rather than just an Alaskan effort. I'd like to thank another individual that really made my day and fulfilled a five-year dream. I was tired yesterday also and was feeling a little down about some developments of the project that didn't come through. And this man approached me at dinner and asked me if we'd be interested in going for an airplane ride. And he took a small group of veterans and myself to UMNAC. I've been trying to get out there for 5 years to look at this place. I'd read about it and looked at the pictures for a long time, and it's a very important piece of history. I feel that it's an area that should be considered by the Native Corporation for nomination as a historical site. Anyway, we got our ride to UMNAC. We got some invaluable film footage and personal testimony from our Japanese guests and General Talley, who built the area, and Admiral Russell, who also was active in the area and has a lot of historical insights. And finally, I would like to thank Admiral Hiroichi Samajima and Colonel Zenji Abe for having the insight and openness to come to a community that they bombed 40 years ago to take part in a World War II ceremony. I don't know if somebody confronted me with a similar situation, if I'd be able to make the decision to come. And meeting these two gentlemen and visiting with them, eating dinner with them and whatnot, they are some of the finest people I've ever met. And they have really made this occasion and this project most meaningful. And finally, I would like to thank all of the citizens of Dutch Harbor for their hospitality and warmth. And we'll see you next year with another project. Thank you.
I'm going to use up some of the prerogatives I've got left and apologize for Ted's use of Dutch Harbor. The city is known as Unalaska. The issue has been skirted by several speakers, but for the benefit of those who are familiar with the Aleut reparation effort, Father Gromoff, and would you stand, please, Father? A member of the Russian Orthodox Church rarely, if ever, gets a chance to tell a priest what to do. I got away with it that time. upon Father Gomez's return from Washington, D.C., where he met as one of the nine commissioners for the World War II Commission, he brought back a proposal drafted by Justice Goldberg. And we are examining that. The elites are happy to know that it isn't a dead issue any more than what took place today is. I'm hemming and hawing because I've got a couple other prerogatives and I've got to decide which one I want to use up first. Gives me great pleasure at this time to ask Mr. William Day of Chevron United to stand and be acknowledged. And would Mr. Rosenthal, Atlantic Richfield Wall Company, please approach the microphone along with Greg Brelsford from the Aleutian Criminal Filings Association. Hank Rosenthal. He may be just outside that door over there. He was sitting right there. Well, moving right along. In absentia. I didn't even have to practice that either. Mr. Greg Brelsford will now read the citation that is a token of our... Is that Hank?
No.
We'll now read the citation, which is a token of the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association's of appreciation for the assistance given to us in our reparation move and in culminating the efforts that led up to today's proceedings. Greg?
As Mr. Tudyakov indicated, Mr. Rosenthal represents the Atlantic Richfield Company, who made a critical contribution to our effort to publicize the attempt of the Aleut people to have their involuntary relocation considered formally by the federal government. ARCO's contribution enabled three half-hour videotapes to be made about that period of history in the Aleutians. So, in absentia, we take great pride in presenting a plaque to Atlantic Richfield Company. And I'll read it to you now. Presented to Atlantic Richfield Company Incorporated in sincere appreciation for your contribution to the Aleut people in telling the story of their relocation experience during World War II. The Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, Philemon Tudyakov, Chairman, 1982.
Now comes the fun time. I had the privilege to relate part of the Aleut history. And every time you pick up a book on Aleut history, you read about Father John Vinyaminov, and I don't mean to take anything away from him. However, from all that he accomplished, nobody mentions the poor little old Aleut who taught him Aleut, which leads up to the Aleutian campaign. We have the same kind of a situation in, I think he's titled General, I mean Admiral Russell, was it? Admiral Squeaky Anderson. We have the same type of situation with him. And I, again, don't want to take anything from Admiral Anderson. However, we have a golden opportunity at this time, and General Farrell will assist us after I provide some background on a gentleman that has been long known for endless achievements in staying alive and enjoying the time that he has spent in the chain, ending up to be the leading authority on the contemporary history of not only Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, but all the way out to Attu. He tried to enlist in the Second World War, but since he had already served in the First World War, they told him ironically he was too old. But he hung in there, served 3 years with the Army Transport Service. His sister is present. General Farrell, would you please introduce our guest of honor for today?
I would like to ask Mr. Henry Swanson to step forward, please.
Let me go around.
Representing Governor Anderson.
In closing, I'd like to elaborate on the legal action that Henry Swanson took, very important, to the Aleut community of Alaska. At that time, the General Services Administration, one of the largest bureaucracies in our country, proceeded to sell parcels of a Mackinac Island. My mother, Anfisa Shashnikov, along with Henry Swanson and Uncle Nick Peterson, contacted Alaska Legal Services. They got a judge to come up with an injunction that stopped the sale. And the people from Universal Seafoods know that better than anybody else. Thank you, Mr. Swanson. The other prerogative is the last word. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please give yourselves one of the biggest hands you can come up with? Thank you.
Very good.